This week in Retronauts, who better to talk about Sonic hacks than the biggest Sonic hack on Retronauts? Yeah, that's me, by the way, Stuart Jip. Hello, I'm hosting once again. This is actually part two of the Sonic fan games chat. So not strictly speaking, just about hacks that he will factor into it. The through line for this one, or at least the sort of intended through line, is the way that the fan game world intersects with the official game world, ultimately, though, of course, still leaning into the fan games themselves for discussion. And joining me once again, the same people who here is, how should we do this? Who's got a car? Has anyone got a car?
No,
I do have a car.
Got
a,
you have got a car.
There we go.
I have a car.
You have a car. There we go. You've got a car. So you go first to introduce yourself first.
Yes. Hello, my name is Ryan Langley, also known as Arlan. I am the guy who runs Sonic the Hedge blog online, and 25 years ago I started Sonic Fan Games HQ, and now I'm a game designer looking for a job, so please hire me. I'll do that at the front of this time. Hopefully, by the time this comes out, I will have a full-time job, but we'll find out.
I hope so too. And
I also do have a car.
You do have a car.
I live in Atlanta.
Who doesn't have a car? Does anyone here not have a car?
I don't have a car. Okay. Hello, I'm Lewis Clark, I otherwise known as Sonic Yoda. I run SegaDriven.com and do extensive fan game and hack coverage on the Sega Driven YouTube channel.
See, now I feel like I've created an atmosphere where people are going to be going, oh my god, this guy hasn't even got a car. But that's not my intention at all. There's no need for a car in this world.
Where I am. No.
It very much depends on your situations, respective situations. I myself don't have a car. Even I don't have a car. Even me, Big Stu. the best, where should we start from? Because where we left off last time was talk of Sonic. Sonic Roboblast 2 and Sonic Ring Racers, right?
So Dr. Robotnik's Ring Racers, right? So yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, I guess maybe we should carry through with a bit of like history on Sonic Mania. I think that's a great start because everybody that involved in that obviously came from the fan game scene or hacking scene. So yeah, Ryan, you've got detailed history here that we can run through for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, with Sonic Mania, like it's well known as now, you know, sort of being made by fans as part of this, as well as, I mean, before that as well, they made the Sonic CD port and Sonic 1 and 2 ports on the Xbox 360 and PS3 days as well, and mobile. But yeah, all these guys just sort of hung out on Sonic Fan Game, or the Sonic Stuff Research Group, to be more accurate. But they were sort of part of this community in the late 90s, early 2000s, where we were just trying to figure out everything about Sonic, and it's sort of how they came up with, like, okay, I want to perfectly accurately, like, figure out what these games run on.
Yeah.
So, what was there, like, a breakthrough for this, like, for the Sonic widescreen? Like, where was there, like, a breakthrough moment where, like, the code turned up or something? Or I just wondered how this really...
Nothing like
off.
That. It's just these guys were just, like, real just deep in this. And it's like, we're just going to figure this stuff out. Part of it really was from the prototypes of Sonic 2 and stuff like that had come out. So stuff like it was called the Simon Y Sonic 2 beta. Basically, someone found a Sonic 2 beta prototype with Hidden Palace Zone and Wood Zone and all this sort of stuff. I think it was just on like a server somewhere, and someone found it. And Simon Y was the guy, I guess, who made a web page about it. And so it was just known as that one. From that, people were like, oh man, this is amazing. All these levels that were not in the final game, what the hell's going on? And so they ended up, a lot of people were then trying to figure out what was inside the ROMs in order to actually find that stuff in the first place.
Yeah, some of this stuff was originally seen in sort of grainy magazine screenshots from really early, like maybe like even pre-alpha versions of it. Like there was dust.
Yeah.
There was like the desert zone that I forget the name of that I think they used in Sonic Mania.
Widely sort of remembered as Dust Hill, but I think it was technically going to be called Sand Shower. But yeah, I know that Taxman, Christian Whitehead in particular, was very sort of infatuated with Dust Hill, and he would recreate a version of it in his fan game Retro Sonic, which I think is one of the earliest ones I remember having like very accurate Sonic physics. It felt, you know, not one for one, but at least you had correct implementation of slopes and momentum, and you could go around loops and things, and you didn't get stuck to surfaces like you did in old TGF fan games and things like that. It was a damn sight better than what had come prior to it, and it really showed.
Yeah, and a lot of like these sorts of things, like trying to make accurate physics in things like Multimedia Fusion at the time, was basically like to just not actually use Multimedia Fusion the way that it's meant to run, where it was it's instead using like ball physics, but then somehow rather than like the platformer physics, so that you then had to basically like recode everything to make a ball more accurately go up slopes and stuff like that, and that's the only way you could sort of do it. And guys like Taxman, aka Christian Whitehead, were some of the first people to sort of look into that more accurately.
So, who else was at the sort of forefront of what eventually became Mania as well? There's Stealth. That's another name that I happen to know.
So, Simon Thomley.
Thomley, right. I wasn't sure if that was Thornley or Thomley.
I think it's Thomley as well. Is it Thomley?
Let's all say it differently for the duration of the podcast for a laugh.
Yeah. This is what happens when you're like only online and never actually like meet these people in person. Yeah. And then you go like, oh, yeah, that's right. Stealth, he was one of the first people. He was like one of the core elements of the Emulation Zone and the Sonic Stuff Research Group. He had a sort of website within the website called Organized Chaos. That was just sort of a lot of collection of his various different things. But
yeah,
one of the things that he did was sort of he created the hacking tool of SonEd in 1999. So SonEd is basically like he was able to like figure out how the level structure works in the original Sonic games, and so you could load up SonEd and then like be able to make your own levels.
Yeah, this is a Windows tool where you sort of open a Sonic ROM in it, and then it will show you the stages that you can then sort of reconstruct. Is that right? I think I've used this before. I failed completely to make anything, but it's not as easy as it looks. It doesn't look at all, to be honest.
No, early hacking was an interesting time because it was very much just sort of like changing the color of the color palette or know, changing the music, or you might get some brave soul had maybe tried to change the level designs, but it was very primitive at this point. I remember like early hacks, like things like Sonic 2 Aluminium Edition, which was basically just they kind of flat shaded all the colors to make it look sort of like cel shaded in a graphical style. Right. So nothing else was done to the game. It was just a visual sort of like tweak, but I always remember being quite infatuated with stuff like that.
I just remember opening Nazticle and changing the colors and thinking, like, I'm a hacker. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, early editions of like the Sonic Hacking Contest, those were sort of like the brackets that you used to have. Like it would be like whether you were changing the presentation, whether you were changing the music, whether you were changing the actual stage designs. Whereas nowadays it feels like everybody is always kind of working to like a total transformation, like new graphics, new stage designs, new music, everything.
I think, sorry to interject, but like with Sonic, and this is just something I want to sort of nail down real quick, even though it's a bit of a tangent, I think that creating a Sonic level is obviously exponentially more difficult than creating, say, a Mario level. And that's not me knocking Mario. Oh, yeah. It's just that Mario is very much, they're the building bricks, you know, put the building bricks where you like. But Sonic is something where you've got to consider things like momentum and player expression a lot more.
Absolutely.
So there's that, which to me is one of the reasons why, and I'm really sorry about saying this because, you know, I don't mean it in an actual broad sense is why so many of the Sonic fan games don't work for me, because like it's just like, it's not there, you know, there's some je ne sais quoi that isn't there. And a part of me, with the rise of like the retro engine, I think a lot of that has been eliminated because now it works exactly the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to visualize this stuff.
I think it's one of the things that I always pick up on when I'm trying to, you know, give people helpful criticism on their fan games or hacks or whatever, is trying to get that nice balance between platforming and speed and not just doing one or the other, because if it's just raw platforming, that's not really what you come to Sonic for. But if you make it too much emphasis on speed, then you get things like Sonic Advance 2, which is just hold right to win, essentially.
That is the closest in the official series that comes to that. I mean, I love that game for sure. It's nice of you that you give like positive criticism, because I've not mastered that yet. I'm very mean and rude to people. It's easy to forget sometimes when I'm out on, where I used to be on Twitter or something, I would just be like playing some brand new game and just being like, why is this part so shit? And then you remember, oh, hang on a minute. Everyone can see this. I'm pretty sure I've had that before. I've criticized something, then like the developer turns up in the comments and you're like, oh shit, I didn't think an actual human would be affected by the things I've said. This is awful, awful. Anyway, sorry, a bit of a tangent there, I apologise, but I just thought it would be worth mentioning. There's a game we'll mention a bit later that I've alluded to a few times that I think is the closest that anyone's ever come to making a perfect Sonic game, as in a perfect fan-made Sonic game, but I'm going to leave everyone in suspense as to what that is.
Yeah, it's all good.
For the time being. So, sorry, where were we before I went off on one like I always do?
in this group, like, was one of the few people who was like, oh, I can actually code and like do actual like coding at the time, like and not just use a multimedia fusion and stuff like that. So he was trying to recreate like real accurate Sonic physics on DOS at the time. So he was making a game. He made like some prototypes, like a Knuckles Ring Rush. That's like just a very simple, like run around a little room as Knuckles. He was also developing something called Project Metrix that was also developed in C++. And so he was a lot of these sort of little bits and pieces that he was sort of working on. Some of the things that he was also well known for at the time was that he made a hack for Knuckles in Sonic 1. And so, So at the time, like, because when you did lock on with Sonic 1 and 2, Sonic 2 and 3, you could play as Knuckles, but in Sonic 1, you couldn't. And there was a whole lot of stuff about, like, why didn't it happen? You know, there was talk about, like, oh, it must be because there was it would crash at a certain point. I think people were, like, on the Scrap Brain Zone treadmills, it would crash or something like that. This is all just hearsay. But, I mean, realistically, it was mainly because Sonic 2 and 3 used pretty much the same engine. Sonic 1 is just probably a little bit too different. As well as the way that Sonic & Knuckles actually locks onto Sonic 2 is it actually just has a whole copy of Sonic 2 within itself that it just kind of unlocks. And that's sort of how that sort of actually works. So he was able to just recreate Knuckles in Sonic 1, change all the palettes to make it sort of work, and then you could just play the whole thing through. And that was, you know, that was a very early development at that point. I was like, oh man, this is actually like really cool. That was like a standout thing or something
the dream come true.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was doing all that sort of stuff. Like another hack that he did, which was very fun, was he did a level demo of Sonic 1 on the Game Boy Advance. Because Sonic Genesis on the Game Boy Advance, which was like released for I think the 15th anniversary of Sonic, just releasing the original game on the Game Boy Advance, is terrible. It is shockingly awful. All the physics are wrong with it. All the sound is wrong with it. It's the screen's too small for really how to play Sonic 1.
I've never understood exactly how that happened. Like, the
From what I've heard, I think they downported like a Java port of Sonic 1, which is why it is not. Yeah, it, very strange choice. But yeah,
yeah.
I mean, there are other Mega Drive games on the GBA, right? Like Smash.
There
Pack
are
is,
Smash Pack also isn't great.
Is it not? Okay, yeah. I have to admit I wasn't sure.
In those really, ones, it seems like a more emulation, I think. I'm not sure.
I don't want, as a layman, to be the guy who says, like, why is this so bad? You know, because I don't know a damn thing about GBA development. It really seems like it should have been doable.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's all dependent on development of the skill of the team, unfortunately. Like, there is some really good ports on the GBA, like Sega Arcade Gallery, but, like, those have been completely built from the ground up. They're not using source code, which you can emulate on GBA, but it's not very good for Mega Drive because the resolution is higher than the actual GBA screen.
Even the DS version isn't great, the Classic Collection version.
Yeah, it's a little better than what you could achieve on a GBA, but at the same time, like, yeah, it's not the correct resolution. There's some sort of squash and scratch
going on. Stealth went, and created this... more or less spot-on version.
We can pretty much make a spot-on version of this. And that sort of, I think, really started the whole, like, oh, we can actually, like, port this stuff more accurately and try to, and probably started where, you know, where they could go, hey, let's try to pitch Sonic CD at a certain point. Where, like, hey, you guys clearly are having struggling here at certain points. Like, early iPhone games, like, they would port, like, Streets of Rage 2 and Sonic 1, I think, to mobile, and it was just it's
using
just a wrong...
the rotary thing on the old iPod, right? That was like one of the really early iPod.
Yeah, there was an early iPod version of it as well. And so,
I bet that was incredible.
I remember that not being too bad, actually, to be honest with you. That one used emulation, it felt correct. And
so I was thinking about the sort of the control scheme with the sort of dial that the old iPod had, but then I think, Sonic only really needs to go left and right and down and jump, so...
Yeah, they've kind of mapped a D-pad to the dial, essentially, and then the big button in the middle being jump, essentially, so yeah.
But that led to, like, the Android versions of Sonic 1 and 2, right? The Android and iPhone versions.
So I think they came later, actually. I think CD was the first thing
So, I mean, at the time, they had, I guess, tried to pitch Sonic CD to Sega, and then at a certain point, they released on YouTube, like, a little video of them showing off, like, a port of Sonic CD on an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that got people really riled up, and it's like, oh, man, this would be absolutely perfect. And so, eventually, they actually... did actually make that, and that was a collection of both I think Stealth and Taxman, okay, Christian Whitehead, to, like, develop this sort of stuff together, and started that process.
So
they started working together because they'd collaborated previously on Retrosonic XG, I think, which was so. That was like a combination of Retrosonic, which was Taxman's fan game, Sonic XG, which was another fan game being developed by Sir Huon and Nightmare, which was very popular at the time. You know, that was making real headway and seemed to be the one that was progressing faster than an awful lot of others at the time. It's still not like the most accurate Sonic physics, but it was pretty good, like, for a fan game of that era. And Sonic Nexus as well, which was being developed by Brad Flick and Hunter Bridges, which again used the Retro engine, which felt very accurate, felt very, very good for a Sonic fan game. Brad would obviously end up being level designer on Sonic Mania. So, like, those three projects basically gave those guys their first sort of taste of working together, I guess. And yeah, I think they initially pitched that Sonic CD demo to Sega, got the go ahead to do it, and allowed that collaboration to continue and flourish into something else. So, yeah, really cool start. It feels like the end game for the fan game community, right?
Pretty much.
Everybody was making, you know, their little projects and hoping that, like, it would lead to something bigger, and these guys basically got the call up, essentially.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to see.
So, like, nowadays, like, Taxman and Brad Flick and Hunter Bridges and all those guys who made, like, sort of... everyone but Stealth, basically, who made Sonic Mania, went off to sort of develop Evening Star Studios. Stealth went off. He was always sort of separate. He has his company called Head Cannon.
Yeah.
And he was trying to develop some of his own stuff as well. But Stealth was sort of in charge of the port of Sonic 3 and Knuckles in the Sonic Origins collection.
Yeah.
That sort of came up. So Stealth was able to do. He was sort of in charge of that, of the porting process of all that stuff. So, bringing Sonic 1, Sonic 2, Sonic CD, Sonic 3 and Knuckles all to new consoles, being able to add Knuckles into Sonic CD because he was not in there before. In the previous ports. They did some really cool stuff with that too, because like in Sonic 2... I think they in some of those games they actually added new paths for some of the characters as well. They added Amy in the plus versions as well.
Yeah, Sonic 2 they added like a proper hidden palace that you can play and access via a secret exit from Mystic Cave Zone, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
down the infamous pit of death.
Yeah,
Mystic Cave. Yeah,
and I love that. That's like the stupidest way to put it, and it's the perfect way to put it too. Of like only stupid Sonic people like us are the people who would know that this thing exists.
I think it sort of preempts their Sonic Mania trades a lot in, which is things that only stupid Sonic people will get. The particular tone that plays when you beat the first boss of Studiopolis Zone, which is a reference to a live stream that went wrong. Stuff
that
like
buzzing
that.
Noise. Yeah, yeah.
Of all the things that could be a reference, it's like, goodness me.
Yeah. Sonic Mania is just sort of that combination of everything. It's brand new levels, it's old levels. They do some really cool stuff with it.
Yeah.
Bringing Ray and Marty back from the Sega Sonic arcade game. Everything, you know, the only reason why that exists is because these guys were crazy enough to go, we want to add in these characters that have not existed since 1993 in anything. And trying to bring those guys back. And so it was really exciting to see these guys. Like, I actually caught up with Christian at PAX Australia when I was there, just to say hello in person. It was just really cool that, like, you know, everyone's just known each other for so long now, and we're still, you know, talking to each other pretty regularly. So,
no, absolutely. I mean, like, it goes, the Retro Engine in particular is just one of those tools which has been so versatile that allowing to get Sonic games into so many different systems. It's a fantastic piece of kit. I remember in particular, Retro Sonic, his early fan game, there was a version that he'd managed to port to the Dreamcast that ran on that as well. Which is also a really, like, fascinating little project. Just lovely to see, like, how versatile that engine is and how well it can be supported in different systems.
So is the Retro Engine like out there for anyone to use? Or?
It's not open source as far as I'm aware, no.
Right.
No. Okay. But now, I mean, people have now, ported back through the, like, they've decompilized the, at least Sonic 1 and 2 and Mania, so that you can, so people can make mods and stuff like that for those games.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's about it.
Hmm.
But, there are definitely games that sort of use some of that. I mean, there's also, like, the thing now is that there's actually a lot of different engines that people have made for these things. So, basically, like, you can make a Sonic game yourself. There's, like, the Sonic Worlds engine, which is in Multimedia Fusion. That's pretty accurate. And lots of, like, simple Sonic Advance 2 type ones where people have, like, recreated various different elements of certain Sonic games to, like, you can just make your own. If you just want to make a Sonic Advance 2, you can just make levels in this and release that as your own fan game.
Yeah, there's like Sonic Dash, I think, for the Game Maker. There's Sonic GDK, which is for Unreal, which is very good sort of 3D momentum based engine for making 3D Sonic fan games. There's some amazing stuff out there. It's now a lot easier to be able to just sort of like pick an engine and just go, okay, right, well, if I want to make a 2D fan game, then this is probably the best shot I can do with that.
The more contemporary fan games, of which we've many to discuss, a lot of those would... I mean, because if you want to... The way I see it... I mean, again, I'm not informed about this, so I'm just speculating here, but, like, were you to want to make a 2D Sonic game that felt like the Mega Drive games, you could really just jump on...
Yeah, really Sonic Worlds would be a really... Yeah, it would be a really easy pick. That works with Click Team. And, yeah, off you go, basically. As we've now witnessed with Click Team, you know, like, that's... that whole ecosystem can now run on, like, the Switch and things like that. I've been recently playing, like, Cryptstalker, which is made in Click Team Fusion.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Great, great, great game there. Was it Sinclair Strange? Just wanted to shout out Sinclair Strange there.
Hell yeah. Great little game.
Mm.
But yeah, no, there's been some outstanding developments in recent years. It seems like now we've really hit that peak of, like, making very accurate 2D momentum-based Sonic games. It seems like a lot of people have really run with the whole Sonic Mania style. You know, it's very, very much like the most popular thing around 2D Sonic fan games nowadays is, like, what if Sonic continued this way onto the Saturn? So we have, you know, widescreen displays and higher color palettes and things like that. So we get things like, I mean, we've got a big old list here, but, like, things like Sonic and the Fallen Star, Emerald Ties, you know, like, they're very much, you know, let's carry on that traditional 16-bit style Sonic action, but, like, add a little bit more of that 32-bit color depth to it and just make something a little bit more
so
of that era.
Before we get to those, I want to mention, I think, because I'm not sure if it was mentioned yet. If it was, I apologize for glossing over, but Stealth was part of a Team Megamix, which this is a hack that I remember, Sonic Megamix. I think which started as a Mega Drive thing and ultimately became a Mega CD thing.
There is a really good
I was wondering what the story is behind that, if it's just a storage space thing or
I'm not entirely sure why they decided to expand to Mega CD, but it did. It's an interesting thing because, like, you can run that's one of the strangest hacks in that, like, you can run it on real hardware, like, and everybody can do this via flashcards, but you could actually burn that game to a disc. And as long as it matched the region code of your Mega CD, you could play it via the actual disk drive itself. And I think there are some, like, sound samples that probably make use of the Mega CD's audio playback. But I can't remember if there's anything in particular. It doesn't seem to have a CD audio soundtrack or, like, a Redbook audio soundtrack.
I remember playing it back in the day, and it's what it essentially was is it's Sonic 1 on the roids, on the juice. Cause it's like, ridiculously fast. You've got your homing attack in there. You've got tons of new, constant enemies, playable characters, all sorts of things.
I think you can play as, like, Shadow.
So hence the Megamix. Yeah. Just the amount of stuff that they've crammed in there, it's wild. You can play it today and still be surprised and impressed by it. I think it's really something.
Yeah. I think there's, like, as part of one of the bosses, there's, like, it starts off with, like, a sample from, like, a Marvel vs. Capcom or something like that. It's like, get ready to break
I remember
like
that.
And so that would be pretty much the only thing it's really using for the CD soundtrack, I think.
Yeah, I think from there, talking about sort of ROM hacks, we've got some interesting ones that I think we should talk about, because I was debating before we started if we should talk about these today, but I think that they are pretty much intimately linked with the fan community. Of course they are, you know, we should absolutely talk about them. I'm going to mention one that impressed the hell out of me that's not on here, and the annoying thing is I've forgotten what it's called, and you'll know it because I think it was quite a well-known one, but there was a Sonic 1 ROM hack I played that was like Sonic 1 VR missions or something, and it was like you would do these tasks that were along the lines of like bop sort of 10 enemies, sort of like the missions from Sonic Origins actually. And it would even have the kind of wireframe boot up, you're in a scrap brain zone, you've got to do this, you finish that, if you do it fast enough you'll get like the higher rank or whatever, and then eventually it would start going into teaching you engine tricks, really. And I thought that was a sort of really clever way of creating something unique with that engine. Everyone can, like, I'm going to look this up because I know it was brilliant. I wish I could remember what it was called.
Yeah, that does sound familiar, but I'm not quite like it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't quite remember it, unfortunately. But yeah, no.
I think it's Sonic really VR, actually. I think it's just called Sonic VR.
Okay.
But that's what rings a bell. But it was just such a cool idea and so different to anything else I'd played in a Sonic hack, where it was still essentially the same thing, but presented in such a different way that it would just make you think about the way that you interacted with the world even more than in a enormous kind of bespoke level. Rather than more momentum, it was more about precision, but in a way that made sense. Like, it wasn't just like, now in this enormous stage, you're going to do some really difficult platforming, because that doesn't even work in the mainline Sonic games sometimes. like Metropolis Zone, for example.
That's a tough one. Yeah, sure.
But I was just very impressed by that. I believe it is just called Sonic VR, and I think that's quite old, so I'd recommend seeking that one out. Where would people find these ROM hacks these days? Sonic Retro or something?
So a lot of them you can find on the Sonic Hacking Contest.
Yes.
So shc.zone is the website for that, as well as Sonic Retro. Like, if you go onto Sonic Retro, a lot of like the big ones will have its own link and sort of a chat about it and stuff like that, with like screenshots and like just the ability to download it. But yeah, the Sonic Hacking Contest, we briefly went on it last time, but it's basically like every year people will show up and show all these like sort of hacks and mods that they've done to classic games and modern games, and you know, either adding new characters and stuff like that. And so it's really exciting to see like that, you know, it's relatively easy to hack some stuff nowadays, and so people are going pretty wild on, you know, figuring out new ways to sort of to basically make the Genesis Mega Drive do some crazy stuff that it was not meant to do.
Yeah, no, I'm always impressed with the achievements of the hacking community now. It's just absolutely insane what you can do. Like I said earlier, like, early hacking contests were very, very simple. It was like, okay, if you're going to change the graphics, then that's in one category. If you're going to change the music, that's in another category. Nowadays, all hacks seem to be, we're going to change all the graphics, we're going to create new zones, we're going to have new playable characters. It is like almost total conversions of the original game, to the point that some of them are just almost unrecognizable as the original Sonic the Hedgehog. It's so impressive as to what that community has achieved now. And yeah, obviously it's not just limited to ROM hacks. There are, you know, modifications to modern 3D Sonic games as well, which you can load in through the Hedgehog Manager, which is always fascinating to see people just dropping stages from other games into a different game, and somehow it works really bizarrely well.
I remember playing the Sonic Unleashed stages in Sonic Generations a while back, Project Unleashed. That's, of course, slightly, I mean, it's great. It's slightly redundant now because Sonic Unleashed has been decompiled. And it requires you, of course, to own the original files in order to run it.
Wink
Because I'm sure everybody did that. I'm sure everybody transferred them from their disk over to PC.
Unleashed Project still has its place, I think. It's still, if you just want to play daytime Sonic stages, it's still a really good way of playing them.
That's not to dismiss the efforts of Project Unleashed, because I was impressed as hell with that. And of course, Sonic Unleashed feels different. It's tighter than Sonic Generations. Sonic Generations is tighter to control than Sonic Unleashed anyway. Again, not to dismiss that game, but there's definitely a place for it. I don't think it's really the same thing, but I did play Project 06 recently, which ports all of the Sonic Silver and Shadow stages into. I mean, I've got to say, I've only played them through that. And you play them through that, you'd be hard pressed to think, why does everyone hate this game? Because they're pretty good. Like, when the thing's not falling to pieces in front of you, it's genuinely quite good. But before we get to that, obviously, we should talk about some of the ROM hacks that are worth checking out. Just a little, like, precision for people who don't know about them. So, I mean, where do we begin with these?
Yeah, well, let's start with the Metal Sonic Hyperdrive and Metal Sonic Rebooted. These were like developed by someone called Lone Devil in 2014 and 2018. These are like full ROM hacks where you instead play as Metal Sonic instead of Sonic. So he's got like the ability to like boost through, you know, when he's charged up, all sorts of like different stuff like that. And the thing with these really is that like they're some of the really the most beautiful ROM hacks, I would say. Like, the person who did all the art for these is just really good at, like, figuring out that sprite art system and using the limited color palettes of stuff. It looks, you know, I mean, it does actually take a few bits and pieces from Chaotix, I think, but it's definitely, like, heavily inspired by Chaotix as well, just in terms of, like, aesthetics, where it's, like, just nice and bright and everything like that, and just intense like that. But it's like really cool. It's, you know, got a few different like weird little power-ups that you've got, like you know, you spawn bombs and stuff.
Yeah.
As well. But if basically, like, if you end up finding some, you know, a weird pirate cart somewhere that someone's trying to sell you at a retro expo,
this one gets reproed a lot, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah,
forgot about that.
The scourge of eBay.
Absolutely. Those games are really awesome. And another one that's another like sort of real like is part of that's also it's like it's a complete total conversion. Like it's very little to do with the actual like original games. It's not just you're playing through Green Hill again or something along those lines. It is like, no, this is a completely original Sonic game where you play as Metal Sonic instead and have completely new characters and all that sort of stuff. Maybe the bosses are very similar. Bosses are the hardest thing really to try to develop in a ROM hack because they're all like custom stuff, code in there for those things. But otherwise, really, really good.
I think it's worth mentioning as well that, like, you know, complete hacks are a rarity, similar to fan games. You know, like it's not something that happens very frequently. So when something like that does happen, I think it's worth celebrating for sure. Then the Metal Sonic Hyperdrive and Rebooted are definitely worth looking in because they are a complete full game that you can run through from start to end. There's no like, it's not a partial project like a lot of these projects have ended up being.
Yeah, these things take time, and you know, absolutely, when you actually have
doing it all for nothing. Yeah,
yeah, you're doing it all for nothing just for clout with a small group of people online, and stuff like that. Not like he's making money; they're making money from these pirate cards out there of Sonic Hyperdrive or anything like that.
It just goes to show the passion of the fan game and the hacking community as well. It's just that they care so much to completely convert a game like that and do so much work and have to release it for nothing. I think it's incredible.
Yeah. Another big one is like the S Factor, which has by Aquaslash. So this is a really big ROM hack where you play not as Sonic, not as Metal Sonic, but as Sonya from Sonic Underground, the TV show from the 90s, and Silver the Hedgehog, who was in Sonic 2006. And it's just like, you know, this is very much like, this doesn't, you know, I'm not sure who is the person who likes both these things. These are both particularly not good things to actually like make something on, but it's a really solid game, and you can play as those two characters, you know, and use some of their abilities. Like Silver can like sort of float and everything like that as well. And you play against Eggman Nega, which was the bad guy from the Sonic Rush games, like the alternate Eggman from that game. So it's a bit of a mishmash of kind of everything, but it's got, you know, a lot of like unique level. The whole levels are completely unique. Enemies are sort of unique in there, and you can sort of play through the whole thing and do everything you can in there. And so it's really, really exciting to see another game like that. That this is not what you would expect, but it is fully there.
Something that throws me off about the S Factor is like it being so named because, you know, Sonya and Silver, you know.
Yeah.
But like Sonic is also S. Like you could just it's just an unusual thing to pull up, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an important story reason why it's called
I think it's just one of those things with the fan community. It's just like sometimes it's like, I like these characters, why not? Why isn't there a game for them? So it's just like, yeah, well, run with it. Go with the idea. Like if that's something that you're passionate about, go for it.
But something good came out of Sonic Underground, and that's wonderful. You know, other than the song, no one's attacking the song here. Maybe we could get the song on. If the editor could put the song in, that would be great. I'd appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much.
Triplets born, the throne awaits. A seer warns of a deadly fate. Give up your children, separate. Bide your time, lie in wait. Sonic Underground. Sonic Underground. They made a vow, their mother will be found.
Yes, S Factor is one that I see around everywhere. It's a very popular one. I also see this Hellfire Saga, because I've seen this, and it's absolutely insane.
Yes, absolutely insane. Hellfire Saga by Red Miso Studios. It's like Sonic meets Ghouls and Ghosts. And yeah. So it's a game where, like, it's not that same, you know, when you think of that, it's like, oh, it's going to be the... You know, what is it, Sonic EXE sort of stuff?
Yes, no,
horror stuff.
The
copypasty,
creepypasty. Yeah.
But it's its own thing. Like it's you know, you've got hit points. You're like fighting against all these like sort of otherly things. Like you actually do fight against like the ghouls and ghost guy at the beginning of the game and stuff as well. It's all like dark and moody and has some really great like sprite artwork and stuff as well. That's like doing some pretty crazy things. Like the bosses are just huge. You're fighting against like the Grim Reaper, at certain aspects of the game. Lots of like really cool, like background, like artwork, especially. I think one of the things I really liked was there was a part in the game where you are running through it and then you hit a certain element and then you go back the same way you came, but now it's completely different. And so, like, the entire level changed by just, like, you know, clicking this switch and then going back this way. So, you know, part of trying to find about these Sonic fan games is really not just, like, how it's an exact perfect version of a Sonic game before, but like what's new, like what's the new cool thing that they've tried doing here. And Hellfire Saga is definitely one of those that just is full of like really unique ideas that have never really been in Sonic games before. And trying out some really cool stuff.
It's got some mechanical changes as well, hasn't it? Like you don't have like a ring gauge anymore. You have a health gauge as like a Castlevania game or something like that. So yeah, like lots of sort of gothic fantasy artwork going on in this. It's nice when people do stuff like this where it's a little bit more outside of the normal wheelhouse for Sonic games. It's just like, let's just try some weird stuff, you know, like maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it does work, but like I'd like to celebrate games like this a little bit more, where it's just like, oh, we've had an idea to introduce some different gimmicks and try and mix up the gameplay a little bit, and I think that should be commended, because it's just not you're not your standard traditional Sonic, but it's built on traditional Sonic. You know, it's fascinating.
I get that. I feel like that extends in a way to even outside of fan games, is this kind of strive for like, this is what Sonic should be like.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think...
And even I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of that, too. I know I have been, but...
Yeah.
It's one of the things that came through when I was playing Unleashed, actually, is at the time being sort of very resistant to, I don't want Sonic in this real world. I don't like it. And playing it recently, because it helps that the edges have been filed off by the decompilation and you can run it in, like, ridiculous frame rates and it looks amazing, you know. But then I found myself thinking, like... I mean, experimentation is kind of the soul of Sonic Adventure, and that's like one of my favorite Sonic games. And that's really nothing like the old Sonic games, really.
Oh, absolutely.
It translates that sort of feel in a way, but Unleashed, I think, is to be celebrated for being so different. If it was the same kind of gameplay in a world that was so sort of semi-generic, it wouldn't work. I think Sonic Lost World feels guilty to that a fair bit. But,
absolutely.
Where you've got the sort of slightly old experimental gameplay, but it just all looks so familiar that it just feels like incorrect, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's got to be a cohesion there. So I think that these ROM hacks do a good job of making it work in that respect. And where else are you going to find this experimentation and artistic like expression except for in these kind of fan projects, these passion projects, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree completely.
Having said that, sometimes you do get hacks that are quasi-official, like the Sonic 3D Director's Cut. Obviously not official, really, but the story behind that one is pretty interesting. I remember when that was being sort of teased on YouTube and stuff, which was John Burton, who worked on Sonic 3D back in the day and worked on many of Traveller's Tales, or as one of the, I think the founder or one of the founders of Traveller's Tales.
Yeah.
On all these games, Mickey Mania, Pugsy, all these games that I love. Decided that he was going to come back and fix Sonic 3D, which is a game that, love and respect, big fan of Sonic 3D. Quite a few things needed tweaking, I think.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of them, turned up in Director's Cut. He really did the work on this one.
Yeah, he basically, as part of his, like, YouTube channel that he was doing where he was talking about Sonic 3D and Sonic R and like all these like how did we do this sort of stuff. Yeah. Part of it was him going through and like going, actually I have pretty much had like a development build for Sonic 3D that he still had, and was sort of showing off like the level editor and stuff that he was sort of messing around with. And at some point, he decided, you know what, I'm going to create like a director's cut version of this, where it sort of included a new map, a world map in the game, like so you could select the level. It included a password system in the game as well, which the original game did not have anything like that. Instead, you had a level select, which was you could actually activate the level select by just jiggling the cart back and forth.
Yeah, because it was like the crash handler, wasn't it? If the game hit an error or crashed, it would immediately boot the level select.
You found the level select sort of thing.
It's a feature.
The password system was actually from the Sega Channel version of the game, because the Sega Channel version was too big. The game is too big to actually fit onto, like, just the one downloaded game, so you had to split it into two parts. So you had to use a password to, like, sort of continue from the second part of it. But he did stuff like, in the game, there's, like, medals that you could collect, and I think if you collect 10 of them, you get to continue. But now it's like, oh, you get points for them, you get a percentage completion. Then, like, you can also collect Supersonic as well, which means he had to, like, change all the palettes to make that sort of work. Like, I remember he was talking about the making Supersonic go super in the first level, which has, like, a waterfall, would make that the waterfall would turn yellow as well. So it just looks like a piss.
Unfortunate color for any kind of waterfall. Yeah, sorry, I talked over you, the exact same joke. I apologize.
Yep. and that sort of stuff. So he had to like do a bunch of edits there. But he also added the Crab Badnik back into the game as well. This was a Badnik that only existed in like a screenshot from an early version of the game, but it was still part of his development build. So he was like, "Yep, okay, I'll just put this into the Rusty Ruin zone." And stuff like that.
If I can be vaguely critical of this, which, because I think it's a very cool hack, don't get me wrong, I didn't like the decision that he made to remove the necessity to collect the flickies, because, on the one hand, I get it, but on the other hand, that's the game.
Changes the mechanics a bit, doesn't
like
it?
That, the levels, you can pretty much just stroll through the levels, you know, get the emeralds easily and just leave. Whereas it's very obviously designed around finding and retaining these flickies with you.
Yeah.
So that felt like an odd decision to me, that felt more like kind of listening to people whinging rather than just like making the right decision for the game. But on the other hand, again, hold hands up here. I get it. I do. I can see why people would want that. I just don't want it myself. But
it's giving people options at least, isn't it? So
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure if there's the option to have the hack and not have that, but then again, I could always just get them anyway, couldn't I? It's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm being physically made not to.
Yeah. It also makes it easier as well. Like it now has like if you lose them, like it'll have a little pointer like, hey, this is where that flicky went.
I forgot about that. That's such a cool idea.
And makes the little icons jump when you're like trying to figure out where they actually are and stuff like that. Yeah. So But yeah, like that was a really cool one. Some other hacks that we've got. There's one called Sonic Classics, Classic Heroes.
Yeah.
This allows you to play through Sonic 1 and 2, but like as three characters, like Sonic Heroes. So like all three are running around at once and you can flip them around. You can play as the Chaotix as well. And so like that is a bit chaotic generally. But also like you can make them like jump and like fly and hold on to Tails and then hold on to Knuckles and hold on to Sonic and stuff like Sonic Heroes as well, which admittedly, I mean, having all three characters run around at the same time is like, that's usually makes a game run real slow, but they've seem to have done a pretty good job of actually making it run well in this instance.
I think that's a very cool idea for a hack in general. Even if it amounts to a novelty, it's a good novelty, I think. So, yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of the hacks that pop up over the years are novelties, and it's just fun. It's like it's experimentation. It shows you how versatile that really old Sonic the Hedgehog engine is when you muck around with it. I love things like that where it's just like, just stick a new character in it. Why not? Like, change the mechanics.
Wasn't there one where every time you got a ring, Sonic would get, like, fatter or something?
Oh, yeah. Sonic 2 XL. Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually he would just get slower and slower.
Another repro classic.
He would eventually slow down he would eventually stop and then die. Basically, he would just have a heart attack, Jesus. I think, in that case.
There's like a charmless fat phobia there, but on the other hand, it is quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like, but it's again one of those silly little like joke hacks that just it mechanically changes the game in a way that's actually kind of interesting in a way. Like it's still worth exploring things that are just very simple, sort of like, okay, well, what if the rings kill you instead? You know, like there's loads of hacks like that, but it's just like it does make the game a lot more. It's a simple way to change the mechanics in a way, in an interesting way that makes it play differently. So yeah,
there's a one called a Tails Splosion, I think, where like you have to run away from Tails, and if he touches you, then you die.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
so you have to like keep away from him for 20 seconds or something like that, and then and then you get to go to the next stage. But it just means that like he'll just like start exploding if you're not too careful.
It's very basic, but I used to like one called Robotnik's Revenge that was just a boss rush of all the Sonic 1 and 2 bosses, I believe.
Yeah.
But with a full timer and everything. I thought that was very cool.
Mm. There's one I didn't put on the list, but there's one where like you play as Robotnik and like have to go around catching animals.
Dr. Robotnik's something, wasn't it? Dr. Robotnik's something rescue, maybe? It's been a while. I remember the one you mean, though.
Yeah. So one of the things with like a lot of these hacks is actually just adding new characters to the games in some other way. So there's a person called E122 Sai who has made a lot of really fun hacks for all the different for Sonic 1, 2, and 3. Ones where like you can play as Sally Acorn from the as Bunny Rabbit from the Sonic cartoons, and in those ones like they have like a little you can use. She'll like shoot a little bullet out, or there's a button which you can like go up to a monitor and then you can click it and it will switch what is actually on the monitor.
Oh, that's great.
And stuff like that. Bunny Rabbit one allows you to like, she'll like fly around and she has like an extendo arm and stuff.
Yeah, it's melee attacks and stuff, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So did they make the Amy hacks that make her play like in Advance 1 with the Hammer Whirl and the sort of standard death? Because I think that's great. Really great. Yeah. Really, really wonderful hacks, those.
Amy and Sonic 1, and then there's like an Amy and Cream. It's like Sonic 2 Pink Edition, I think is what it's called, where you play as Amy. And in those ones, I think it's actually like the more modern style of Amy and Cream. But there's other ones where you can play as Amy with her like ability to like use a hammer in like a twisty fashion, and there's also like a lot of
the spinning attack in the air. Yeah,
I think a lot of those came from like mods of Sonic Mania to add her into it and stuff as well.
I was a little disappointed when in Origins, Origins Plus Amy was based on Sonic Superstars rather than on Sonic Advance. Although it was a bit of a tall order, I know, but I thought that the way Amy played in Sonic Advance was a really interesting challenge because it almost made her into like the hard mode character because you couldn't. You weren't invincible when you were jumping anymore, and you know you had to think in time and make use of this whole new moveset. And I loved that they ported that into Sonic 1. It just made the game feel so different.
Yeah,
yeah. And you can also play as like Big the Cat in the Pink Edition as well. Like you, so I mean, to even
Team
add
Rose.
A, even add a big character like that into a Sonic, into a Genesis game is already pretty hard. And to actually make them accurately the right purple is probably pretty wild to try to do. But
yeah,
he can, he'll wander around, you can hit people with the with his thing, and I think you have to go and collect Froggy as well. So you have to like run around the levels and try to find him there.
No fishing, sadly.
There is a Biggs Fishing Derby is another one, which is
Oh yeah, based on the 2600 game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a fishing game, but it's on the Genesis and you play as Big and you're like trying to put your rod down and try to get to the lowest fish as much as possible and get points.
That's a really cool little game.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just the craziest things that people have done to try to make stuff onto the Sega Genesis through a Sonic 1 hack in some way is pretty wild.
Again, yeah, just shows the versatility of that ROM, isn't it? It's just crazy.
Yeah, people have really just completely taken it apart at this point. Some other ones here, like we've got is you can play as Gex the Gecko in Sonic 1.
This was a recent one, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember seeing this at a hacking contest recently.
This was by Joe Nick. And in this case, you can, you know, it's tail time, so you have to like, you can whip your tail, you can jump, you can spring tail onto things, but also in order to actually finish levels, you have to collect TV remotes, which is sort of what you did in the original game as well.
Yeah. Mechanically making it more like Gex as well. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. So there's like one for the special stage and one for the regular stage. So just changes up what Sonic is, in that way. And the thing I also love about all of these is that they have to change all the sprites for the like title screen as well.
Yeah.
so like make, you know, Gex pops up in the little, emblem and like flicks up his, sunglasses and stuff like that. Like he's real cool. You know,
did they get any sample? Did they get any sample speech in there?
I think it does. I think
Wow. Yeah.
It'd be like, it's tail time or something like that. Probably.
This is like a party at Nelson.
And like another one is like, you can play as Mega Man X in Sonic 2, which is pretty wild. And it plays like Mega Man X does.
That's hilarious.
And like there's actually like areas where you go and like you collect this, and then you've now got like the you know, speed boots and stuff like that. You can like wall climb, like everything that you can think of in there. One thing I actually didn't add on here, which is pretty, it sort of was in development and then got released without his intention. But there's a Yoshi in Sonic 2. Where you play as Yoshi's Island Yoshi with little baby Sonic on his back, and you can just sort of run around Sonic doing that, shooting eggs. It also even does like the touch fuzzy get dizzy stuff on the Genesis, which is kind of insane to even attempt to do without like a Mode 7.
Yeah, that is wild.
Impressive stuff, man.
And stuff like that. It was that. I'll just see if I can find whoever did that. Oh, whatever. It's fine. That person, you did a really good job, whoever that was. Yeah.
Google everyone. Yoshi and Sonic 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the last sort of ROM hack we got here, I mean, there are thousands of Sonic ROM hacks. They're all really good. These are just like a real small section of it. But one of them is called Sonic Delta. It includes every single level from Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles. Like, you can just play them all in order from the start as any character.
Yeah.
But they've also added so many other levels in there. There's, like, levels based off of, like, Robotnik Winter Zone, which is, like, the Game Gear.
Yeah, there's a few 8-bit stages that they remake in 16-bit style. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and so there's all those things to get through. And it's just, like, one of those things now. It's just getting bigger and bigger where it's, like, and part of this is like, look, we're not limited by like being only able to have 1 megabyte of storage on a Sega Genesis cartridge. It's now just as big as you want it to be. And so as long as it can just run on that, then it's fine.
Yeah. One of the things they recently added to it is, I'm sure we've all seen it, like the Video Game History Foundation like re-released the like map for Cyber City Zone from Sonic 2, the deleted stage, and they've put that map now into Sonic Delta as a playable stage as well, which is incredible.
Oh wow!
So yeah, you can actually experience the original Cyber City as intended, working within the confines of well, I say the confines because Sonic Delta is massive, but yeah, within the Mega Drive the Sonic game now.
Yeah. So, yeah,
really cool to see.
It's amazing that, like, going back to those days when, like, you know, they actually just drew this up on a map on paper, and for the most part, like, they just did that and then went, yep, no, that's about right, and, like, didn't really change much after that is pretty wild. Like,
yeah,
to get it, like, on your first shot, basically, of putting it in, it's like, yeah, that seems right. It's like, same with, like, the Sonic R stages, where it's like, yeah, here's just a map that I made. I drew up what this should be, and they went, yep, okay, cool, we'll just do that. Like, no iteration, yeah, really.
It just seems like work quite well, yeah. No,
it's like, all right. And as a game designer, it's like, that's not how that works usually.
But again, I suppose, like, if you're familiar with, you know, developing stages at that point, then maybe it's just experience, but yeah.
So, further newer fan games we didn't talk about last time that are absolutely important to discuss, supremely important to discuss, and I'm gonna come in with one because I've been sitting on it the whole time, two episodes, because I want to talk about my favorite Sonic fan game ever, which is Sonic Triple Trouble 16-bit, which is Noah Copeland's game, and it's the only time I can think of where I've ever played a Sonic fan game where I've found myself at no point thinking, well, this sucks, about any specific part of the game. Now, let me rephrase that. There was one part of the game that sucked, but he fixed it.
Oh, I think I know.
Which was the elevator towards the elevator towards the end. That sucked, but then he fixed it, so good on him. And I want to stress enough, that's not me playing these fan games going, these games suck. I mean little specific bits of them. Like bits of level design or bits that made me go, that sucks. But Sonic Triple Trouble 16-bit I thought was just like majestic. As a fan game, I would have paid for that, easily paid for that. And the fact that it's free, I mean, it has to be free, really, doesn't it? Because it's a fan game. But
yeah,
I think it was absolutely awesome. I had a great time with that. Even the new sort of special stages were cool. Everything about it was just this beautiful. I mean, Sonic Triple Trouble is a pretty cool game, but it is kind of hamstrung for obvious reasons. Has some issues. And I think what he did here is he made something that is just like eminently superior while also keeping the heart of it in a really beautifully designed way. I would recommend anyone download and play this. Like, I mean, there's a bunch of cool games here to play, and I'm sure you're going to be very busy, but this is this is my pick of the lot. I had a great time with this one. Really brilliant. And, so much to see as well. But it doesn't outstay its welcome either. It's just a perfect game. One of the best Sonic games, as far as I'm concerned. It's just that good.
No, it's a real highlight for sure. And you can play it on so many formats as well. You can sideload it onto Android phones and stuff like that now. It's incredible. So, supported by lots of different things. It's not just a Windows game now.
I did not know that.
Yeah, no, it's really impressive. I've played it on Android, and you can, you know, wire up a Bluetooth controller and play it with that, and it's just really comfortable and just a lovely way to play it. So if you're looking for a bit of handheld Sonic fan gaming action, you can do it that way as well. It's really fun.
That's awesome.
But yeah, no, a real highlight for sure. Noah Copeland was also developing a like 16-bit style port of Sonic Drift as well, which unfortunately has made it to demo. So there is a version you can play as a demo, which is really cool to check out. But unfortunately, he's not going to be continuing that project to completion. But another thing worth checking out. Noah Copeland, and another amazing talent in Sonic fan gaming recently. I can't
imagine how good his Sonic Drift would have been, considering that when I did the Game Gear directory a couple of years ago, I came to Sonic Drift dreading it, and I came out of Sonic Drift going, wow, that's really good. That's really, really, really good. I can't believe how good that is.
Yeah,
so it's a
good little fan game. It doesn't overcomplicate things like Ring Races, and it's got like a sort of Mode 7 style track, which is really fun. Nice and smooth. Plays really nicely. Very, very easy to pick up and play.
Nice.
Yeah, and like Sonic Triple Trouble 16-bit is like one of the few I've actually played through in its entirety, and I enjoyed the whole lot of it. I enjoyed like taking what was part of those original levels and then like really like just upping the ante on those things. Like people remember the music from Triple Trouble, people remember Fang the Sniper from Triple Trouble. So like having new ways for all that sort of stuff to actually like. Fang the Hunter, I guess, now is sort of
Knack the Hunter. I'm sorry, but I'm a Knack the Weasel stan. I don't like this revisionism. Was it his original name in the first place? Maybe, but I also call him Dr. Robotnik, so here we are.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the movie's called him Dr. Robotnik as well, so don't worry about it.
Dr. Knack the Robotnik Weasel.
Yeah, there you go.
Just go back to that one magazine article that called him Jet at some point, and it's like, no, this is the one.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Preempting an actual Jet character by many years.
Oh, God, him, yeah.
So, shall we work our way down the list then?
Yes, let's absolutely do that. Yeah, I apologize for jumping ahead. I got excited.
No. Let's go
for
it.
No, absolutely. It's definitely like a positive one. I recommend everyone downloading that one.
Definitely.
Some of these ones are just like, you know, they're pretty crazy in different ways. The one I first got on here is one that I sort of have been a bit of a stand for. It's called Sonic Speed Course. It was a demo. It's only in demo form made by Sharp. It's one of those things where, like, they tried something different in... They didn't just make a Sonic game.
Yeah.
Again, here's a game with Sonic in it, but in a different thing. And Sonic Speed Course is Kirby's Dream Course, but Sonic. And
you cannot go wrong with that pitch. Like, honestly, that is the spot.
Kirby doesn't make sense in Kirby's Dream Course. Sonic makes perfect sense in Kirby's Dream Course, where he turns into a ball. You have to hit the robots. You hit all the robots, and then the ring appears. That sounds exactly what it should have been. Absolutely. So that's like, I think, hey, Sega, you should totally make that. Like, I want to see more non-Sonic Sonic games. It used to be on the Game Gear, like puzzle games.
Well,
and
it always
stuff
used
like
to
that.
Be sort of like a year on, year off, didn't it? Like, you get a mainline Sonic game and then you get a spin-off the next year, sort of thing. Like, that was always the way.
Spinball is a weird spin-off and stuff like that. Yeah, like, right now, it's just Sonic and then racing and then driving games. And I'd like to see something a bit in between, just a, you know, $10 downloadable game or weird little mobile games and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Another one is Sonic SMS Remake. So, these games, there's like two of them.
Yeah.
They play and look like the original Master System game, so they're really inspired by those games, but are full widescreen, but have gone really far beyond. Like, they say remake, but they're really not. They're just entirely original, brand new levels. They'll sort of do demakes of levels. They'll do, like, you can play as Shadow and Ray and Mighty and all that sort of stuff as well. And similar to what you were talking about with Triple Trouble, like, you can play these on, like, phones. Everything. They've just got here's just the APK. You just download this.
I've seen them on the Vita even. Like, you can play them on the Vita if you want
to. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am far too close to those games to accept these fan games. I know. I'm not saying they're bad. It's the kind of thing where I remember playing the first one and being like, a Sonic Master System remake. I'm well up for that. That's well up my street. And then within 5 seconds, there's something new in it. And I'm just like, nope.
Just love those Master System games so much.
Like that Sonic 3D and 2D game that I think we briefly talked about. But it's a bit like that for me. But I think it's cool that these sort of engines are out there. People can work on the Sonic SMS games and give them some love, you know.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Another one that's like that was very big back in like 2016, almost a decade now, was one called Sonic Utopia.
God, it's weird to think that that's this old.
But like it's really sort of an open world single level demo of Sonic running in like a Green Hill Zone. The thing I really like about it was that the thing with Sonic games, like the 2D Sonic games, is that they're very vertical. We're talking about like Mario games before. Mario games are like very there's like one way to play each level. But Sonic games tend to have, like, branching paths. There's, like, always a top path, a middle path, and a bottom path. And that sort of pathing system just doesn't particularly work in a 3D game. Because trying to go up and seeing what's below you, seeing what's above you is just really hard.
Yeah.
But the Utopia tried to go, let's go really wide. And so, instead, you are just using momentum. Like, you can go up, you can gain momentum by going down like hills and then getting up real high by going on a loop. And there's just kind of all these little weird secrets in corners and like stuff like that that just like allow you to explore. And it's one of those, this became like a lot of like your Kotakus and stuff like, this is what a Sonic game should be.
It's real Sega hire this man, the game.
Pretty much. And like they were like, they must have made Sonic Frontiers based off of Sonic Utopia. And it's like, no, but it's something where like they're sort of both trying a similar thing there where like they're trying to use Sonic speed in a different way. And so I think that one was pretty cool by all standards in that case.
Definitely. I added Sonic and the Fallen Star by his Stardrop team. This is just a really gorgeous, gorgeous game. Like, they've nailed like a visual aesthetic that's very unique. They sort of hit this very specific color palette of blues, greens, purples, and reds. Like every stage seems to use that specific color palette, and it gives it a cohesion. So it feels like you're sort of actually traveling through a world, essentially, and not just like individual stages that don't feel thematically linked. It's an incredible effort and well worth checking out. This is another complete Sonic fan game as well that I would highly recommend.
This is out. This is finished.
Yeah.
Out, completely finished. You can download it now. It's a great game. They were developing a sequel called Sonic of the Moon Facility, which has unfortunately been cancelled now. But a near complete build is available to download as well. You can only play as Sonic in it. They were hoping to expand it to more characters. And it's a little bit buggy in places, but it's still another, you know, complete Sonic campaign that you can play through in the style of Sonic and the Fallen Star. Well worth checking out as well. Another real highlight of recent years. Like, just, and it just seemed to just come out of nowhere. It just like,
called again, the sequel?
The sequel is called Sonic and the Moon Facility.
Oh, right. That's an interesting name.
Yeah, they introduced some sort of like, alien life form that keeps showing up throughout the game. It's nice. It's interesting. Like, honestly, they're doing some really cool stuff. But similarly, visual, it's got like a real cohesive visual look to it that's very unique to it. It's almost kind of cel shaded, I guess, is probably the closest thing, but in 2D. A really, really cool one. Well worth checking out. The only downside I'd say is that that cohesion does make it feel like you're kind of playing the same stage over and over again. So it does make you appreciate why Sonic stages are the way they are, where they're like definitively, well, here's an ice stage, here's a grass stage, here's a lava stage, because it makes it feel like you're in a new location each time. Whereas Sonic and the Fallen Star does kind of, unfortunately, feel like you're playing through the same area over and over and over again. But I do really like its visual style. I think it's something unique among Sonic fan games for sure.
Absolutely.
Do you want to take us over to Emerald Ties, Ryan?
Yeah, I'll quickly go through Emerald Ties. Emerald Ties is very much like a Sonic-style Sonic game, but it's done by Arietti, and it's a neat demo. It's one of the first I sort of played when I got back into Sonic fan games, and I was like, oh man, this is actually really cool. Just like some really unique badniks in the levels, as well as like new shields. Like, as I was saying, like the thing I'd like to look for is what's new to these games. And this one had like a wind shield that sort of allowed you like to sort of hover around for a bit, that I thought was like kind of neat in a new way. And Arrietty now, like, they've sort of not working on that anymore, but they've been working on a game called Prototype N, which is sort of a Mega Man inspired, but original game.
I always felt like Emerald Tires would end up getting completed. It always showed up like randomly every 4 years or so. It was just like, it was in development for so long, and then it was a random demo would just show up at a Sage, and it was always lovely to see. Like, I was always impressed by Emerald Tires. I thought it was a beautiful game. Lovely pixel art in that one.
Absolutely. Another one which I really, really like, again, in that same, like, 2016, was this game which has the most, like, emo name, but it's called Sonic Versus Darkness. This game is definitely, like, another one that's like, oh, man, I would really love this as, like, an actual real game as well. It's a Sonic – it basically takes the Sonic Rush games, but takes Unleashed Element. So, all these other games are usually using Sonic 1, you know, the original Genesis games. This is a Sonic Rush game, but instead of having, like, you know, a vertical two screens, it's just there. But, like, it just plays super well. It's got, like, lots of really cool elements that, like, you would get from, like, Sonic Unleashed. Like, when you go past a post, it goes, like, the, like, tick, 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 da-da-da-da, all that sort of stuff that, like, really feels really fun. And Sonic, the advanced games are all sort of a bit weird in their own ways. And, you know, sometimes, you know, but adding the rush elements of just being able to boost through stuff, like the way that it does, like, action chains when you're doing stuff, it just has a flow to it that
that's usually missing
from a lot of, like, even, like, more modern Sonic games and stuff like that. But, like, when you get that flow, it just looks really cool. And it's just like, yeah, I'd love to see more of this. It also makes me go, like, man, I'd love to see a Sonic Rush remake, but, like, in this style. Basically.
The handheld Sonics of relatively recent years, I'll say. I mean, they're not so much now, but you know what I mean? They do run the risk of not being lost, obviously, but being kind of redundant in that sense. I do like the way that this one does carry forward that sort of style. For my personal tastes, I'm trying to put this in a polite way. Too much shit all over the screen all the time for me makes me feel tired. But it's the kind of game that looks like it's aimed at the people who like to be graded, and that's not me. So, but I do love the fact that it's like sense of speed, but also, you know, you can see so far ahead of you now in widescreen. Sonic's quite small on the screen that it removes the issue of, like, the Sonic, some of the Sonic Rush levels had, which is that they'll drop you somewhere, sort of encourage you to boost, and then you'll just immediately die because there's a bottomless pit there. I think this looks really good. It makes me feel very old, but it looks very good. So yeah, I'm definitely going to be giving this one a go.
Cool stuff. I added Sonic World to our list. So this one's been in development for a very, very long time. Very much a love letter to adventure style 3D Sonic fan games, Sonic games in general. They've drawn so many different, like, stages from different games, like Sonic Heroes, Sonic Adventure, even Sonic 3D Blast, like, are represented in Sonic World. And they just keep adding to it all the time. There's so many levels, so many characters. You can play online multiplayer. It's a very, very impressive little game. It's a little shonky as a 3D Sonic fan game, unfortunately. But I think just the sheer quantity of stuff that you can do with it is pretty impressive. And it's still in active development. It gets tweaked. It's now in sort of like Sonic World DX form. So they've kind of tweaked the engine to make it feel a little bit more robust and less shonky like it used to. But like, it's still a very, very impressive development. Another one that just is constantly in development. I'm just so impressed by how much they've added to it, and it's always lovely to see that it's still out there to kick, you know, still kicking.
Yeah, it's also got like a full like multiplayer mode and stuff like that. Like you can just join like a server, and then you wander around a hub, and then you can like try to just actively start a level and just like race through it. I played a level where it was like Rainbow Road, I think, from Mario Kart was in there. They've ported as you said, it's got a lot of jank to it. Like a lot of it's like, there's just no lighting in this level, but that's fine. It's just like, sure, it's just got this level in it from this game now. We just pretty much just loaded the file into it and then just figure it out. It sort of works. As long as the end is there and the enemies are there. But yeah, it's just a fun goof 'em up type game in there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think a game that very much achieves what Sonic World is doing, but at a much higher quality, is Sonic GT, which is again another 3D momentum based platformer. But oh my god, like just the it's insane to me to think that the fan game community reached this point where we're developing full 3D boost style Sonic games and putting them out there for nothing. It's a wonderful thing. Like just the sheer feel of that, again, like that flow, like you're talking about, like when you get a nice rhythm where you're, you know, running down a slope and round a loop and launching off a ramp and maintaining your speed through the boost and stuff like that. It's just, it feels incredible. And Sonic GT is a real highlight. I think it's one of the most impressive 3D developments that has come out of the fan game community.
Absolutely. And like the thing with that game as well is that the team who made that have now gone off to make a new game, and they've had a Kickstarter for it. It's a game called Rollin' Rascal. Which is very much,
I think
much
it was quite
like,
successful, wasn't it, the Kickstarter?
It was quite successful. I've kickstarted it. It is very much like, lovely. This is a 3D open world Sonic type game, except you're this little dude. You know,
legally distinct. Sonic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The best type of distinct.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the natural evolution for these things, though, you know? Like you make a game like and let's go and make something that we can actually, you know, sell and make some money off, because I think the talent involved in that team is very apparent in Sonic GT, and I'm glad that Rollin' Rascal has been so successful.
Absolutely. Talk about Sonic 3D and 2D.
Yeah, we mentioned it earlier, didn't we? So yeah, this was an attempt to get Sonic 3D Blast working as a sort of Sonic 3 and Knuckles style traditional 16-bit Sonic game, and it's a bit of a mixed bag, I've got to say. I really do appreciate the effort that they've gone into making this, because it is a full game that you can play from front to back, and again, those are very rare in the fan game community. So hats off to Sotonuk for developing and releasing a full game. I just think it's a little bit mixed and a little bit confused in its direction. I do find that the choice to have it in 4:3 and not widescreen really does hurt the stage design quite a lot. You often find yourself running into enemies because you can't react to them quick enough, or hazards and things like that. It's just, having a wider view on the action would have really helped this.
It can work. I thought that Triple Trouble was in 4:3 as well. Triple 16. I could be wrong about
choose.
That.
You can choose between 4:3 and widescreen.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it defaults to 4:3.
Because I played Sonic 3D in 2D back when it came out.
Yeah.
And my prevailing thought when I played it, and again, I don't want to be mean, because like it's obviously a huge amount of effort's gone into this, but like I just kind of find myself thinking it's that thing of like, oh, there's no restraint. It's not enough that we're doing this. We've got to get all these characters in there who weren't anything to do with Sonic 3D whatsoever.
Yeah. That's the confusion I was talking about. Yeah, it doesn't feel like Sonic 3D a lot of the time, does it?
It's just I find myself thinking, like, I mean, this is quite cool, but it's not Sonic 3D and 2D, is it? It's like, it's just a Sonic game. With some motifs from Sonic 3D, and you know, not knocking it, because that's just me being a bit.
I mean,
it's a criticism. It's not like a dismissal. Obviously, it's.
Yeah.
I just feel like that something. I think that there's something that I've got a little pet theory about this. Actually, can I get into it, or would that be
no,
unnecessary?
Go for it.
Okay, well, this is going to come off slightly too much like I'm sort of psychoanalyzing, but it's not intention. Well, basically, I think that there's this. With the community and with many communities, particularly the crossover with furry communities, I would say, who again, I'm not dissing. I've got loads of friends who are furries, nothing wrong with it. And there is a space where it's like, you're going to get the encouragement that you're seeking. And that's a good thing. People are going to say, hey, this is great. Keep doing this. But you don't, I think, get in a sort of formative stages. There's not a lot of, this isn't really great. This doesn't fit. Maybe we should change or remove this. And I think with, I use Freedom Planet as my example of this because Freedom Planet is a really cool game that I really like that has some things in it that make me go, what's this doing in this? Like tonally, like this is so inappropriate for this game. And I think it comes from that kind of be supportive of this, which means don't ever say this is not good.
Yeah, this particular element
is not good. And I'm not, I don't really like saying it because I know now that obviously with things like, the fan game communities now and the spaces that exist now and the groups and the competitions, that there's very much a space to say, not sure about this now. You know, I think the culture has changed in that respect.
But at the same time, I think it is a bit of a catch-22 because, like, full Sonic fan games don't get completed unless it's one person with one singular vision just cracking on and getting on with it. And as a result, you get things like this where it comes out as a little bit of a, oh, I don't know what you were going for here, mate. Like, it's a bit of a confused focus, right? But that's because it was developed in isolation. At the same time. These games are being developed by young people probably getting into coding for the first time. And for them to put those, put demos out into the public and have them criticized can be quite a put off as well. So it's also a case of.
Oh, completely. I completely get that.
Do I ask for criticism and improve my project and am able to take that and use it constructively? Or is it a case of, do I just crack on? Just get on with it and make it in isolation and just make the thing I want to make.
I want to make it clear. I would much rather these things dropped and that actually came out and were imperfect than not come out. Like that's, you know, that's obviously the preferable thing here.
This is it.
And I don't want to, I didn't want to come into this and be like.
No, no, but I completely understand what you're saying. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's a strange community in that it doesn't function the same as a normal, you know, game development process, which would have testers and people and lots of different people like accessing the project at one point and giving feedback. These things are generally made in isolation. And obviously that's where you get all the weird quirks. And I think that adds the character to them.
Oh,
I think that's
sure.
one of the things that I really like about fan games.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does mean that you end up with projects that are a little confused and probably needed some time in the oven or needed a little bit of testing or some feedback and stuff to make them better.
And these games are being tested by your mates, aren't they? Which is obviously very different to being tested in, professionally tested. Not to say these people aren't doing a good job. You get what I mean. I think it's what lends, what makes these so interesting in some ways. But, unfortunately, the critic in me cannot just ever shut up. So.
And like you say, like, it's not that fan games are above criticism or anything like that. It's just a case of the location in how they're built, which is very much in isolation by a single person a lot of the time.
Yes.
Ends up creating a lot of quirks that, you know, we would probably go, hold on a minute. Maybe we should tweak this or change it or, you know, just, they don't get the feedback that a lot of, AAA games or even just indie games in general just get in general as they're being developed because there's a team supporting that. But yeah, interesting. Definitely. I'm glad we had a little chat about that because it is one of those things where it's like, this is what gives Sonic fan gaming its identity, its character, its quirks. I like that about it. But you do have to be.
The individuality is very desperate.
But you do have to be forgiving of that because it's not.
Yes.
It's not going to be on. You're not going to be everybody's cup of tea like yourself.
There's something like Triple Trouble 16-bit. Sorry to go back to that well again. Mm. It's for me. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but it just turned out with none of that. Like,
well, see, that had regular demos that were coming out and being tested and he was probably receiving a lot of feedback off that. And he's taken that criticism on and made a good game as a result, you know? And like you said, even the bit that you didn't like was corrected in a further patch, you know? It's one of those things
which I appreciate it, although I wish you'd pitched it before I finished the game. It happens. It gives me an excuse to replay it. So, you know, no complaints.
But yeah, let's carry on with our little list here. We've got Sonic Classic 1 and 2 here, which I added. I wanted to highlight these because, again, they're very much part of the modern crop of modern 2D star Sonic fan games, what if Sonic continued on the Saturn and had a widescreen display and higher color depth? They're very well designed. I think they've got a really good stage design. And the developer Hez, who created both of these are both complete fan games, by the way, another two full games that you can play from front to back. He also worked with Frank Cifaldi to help restore the Cyber City Zone that was restored from maps from the original Sonic 2 development team. And you can play that within his Sonic Classic engine. And that version has been what has been sourced to be ported over to Sonic, things like Sonic Delta. So his the initial playable version of Cyber City was within Sonic Classic. And developed by Hez, but using the files and the maps sourced from Frank Cifaldi. So yeah, really cool stuff.
Nice.
One more I want to talk about is Sonic Frenzy Adventure. This was another one that was in development for absolutely ages. I reckon probably 15 years, and finally released in its entirety in 2020. But what I like about it is it feels like a Sonic fan game from 15 years ago. Like, he kind of left in all the quirks. It's got some very weird physics. It's a very fast game. And it does have, you know, momentum and sort of traditional 16-bit style action, but because of the speed of it, it doesn't have the same feel as a classic 16-bit Sonic game. It feels very quirky and a bit strange and out there. This was developed by Frenzy-kun, and I think it's one of those games I'd like to highlight because it does a lot of interesting things with shields and abilities. You can like level up Sonic's rings as you play the stage, which adds further abilities to his arsenal. Mechanically, just a very quirky, cool little game that does something a little bit different. I would highly recommend. Gets very difficult though. It has a boss after every single act as well, which is insane. Like, there is so much creativity in its bosses. It's like how he continued to find ideas for bosses throughout this game is insane because it's such a big game. I also added Sonic Overture. God, I forgot I added this to here. I recently did a video
on...
What
a beautiful game.
Yeah, I recently did a video on the revival of this, which is called Sonic Overture 95. But the original 2014 demo is a wonderful thing, like one of my favorite fan games of all time. It's not a complete game, it's only a little one stage demo, but it has three acts, and it's trying to reimagine Sonic 1 using its original concepts. So stuff like Sonic's original bunny design is now an antagonist. Robotnik appears in his pajamas, like that piece of concept art. There's the loop with the sun face on it, which you've seen in concept artwork that gets added into the game. It's got this lovely soundtrack with like a vocal theme on it as well. It's one of my favorite fan games. I think the stage design is fantastic. I was really sad to see it only ever existed in that one stage demo. And then all of a sudden in 2023, it's been revived by another team as Sonic Overture 95, and they've added new stage to it. They're continuing that project forward, and I'm really excited to see that project continue.
Sonic having his bunny like equivalent as the antagonist, that's just Epic Mickey, isn't it? Like, they've just done Epic Mickey there.
Very much so, yeah. It's the Oswald to Sonic.
Criticize them for doing such a thing.
I think it's just a fun little thing that they've added in there, and yeah, I just he continues to show up in Sonic Overture 95. He antagonizes you before the boss battle in the second stage as well. It's a really cool game.
It's super dedicated to that stuff too, because there's like lava sections in the game which like look exactly like the concept for like Marble Garden Zone, which is more like, you know, that was probably just drawn on like an Amiga or something at the time, like thinking about it being on a sprite sheet, and like all the enemies look like little goblin dudes that were in like the original proto concepts and stuff like that too. So
yeah, those early really screenshots fun. Like with the UFOs in the background of Marvel Zone are in there as well.
Yeah,
I love that. Like, never let it be said they will not find a use for an idea. It's great.
It's fantastic. I love all that stuff.
They even got Robotnik's little like butt crack in there.
It's got a really cool, like special stagey sort of thing too, where, you're trying to chase up over Eggman, but it's all 3D looking, but it's also based off of like some of those early CG things I think that they did, as well.
Yeah, it's got that sort of sprite scaling Space Harrier kind of look to it, doesn't it? Yeah, it's really fun. But yeah, no, a lovely project. I'm glad to see it back, and I hope it continues to develop.
For sure.
Do you want to take us over to Project Reignition?
Yeah, I'll just do this. This is sort of our last of the fan games, but it's also like more of a collective of just like lots of stuff that people are trying to do in the Sonic world, which is like, you know, now that we have so Project Reignition is basically a remake of Sonic and the Secret Rings, which is the Wii game. It's a game which you need to use the Wiimote to do everything with. It's, you know, going back to it now, it's, I mean, it was already really hard to play when it first came out.
Yeah, it's a real hard game to revisit.
You don't want me to get started on this.
It does look very wonky.
I remember playing this, a friend of mine, the original, I mean, brought it round, and I remember at one point just sort of being like, nah, I'm over this, putting the pad down and just like going to the toilet. And then when I come back, it's like stage clear. And I'm like, I don't even know what's happened here. Like, I that shouldn't be happening. It's, I do like the idea of it getting a controller do-over, though, because there's definitely something here. I don't think that they didn't do the work with this game. I think they were probably put in an unenviable position of, this has to be like this. This has to be motion. We have to use this Wii remote. And, of course, the Wii eventually got like Sonic Colors, which is a much more traditional kind of boost game. But Secret Rings, I am looking forward to Project Reignition. If it's content complete, so to speak, because I'd like to experience that game in its entirety without having to pull my own neck off in sheer anger, which is what I end up doing whenever I try and play it. And of course, you can play it on Dolphin, but it's just kind of a pain. Like, it's there's no way to make this game not a pain, so I'm hoping that they'll get this done and it'll be transformative for its reputation, if anything, you know.
Yeah,
and then it can move on to doing Black Knight, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's, yeah, I think, well, there's, I'm... yeah, part of people are doing, a part of this is really just like these different, you know, trying to recreate stuff. So I've put Project Reignition here, but there's also like the Sonic 06 remakes and stuff like that as well, that Project people 06, have been working on, trying to port it, you know, natively to console, but also like trying to fix stuff in those games. Like, I would say that, like, trying to fix Sonic 06 in the ways that they do it, I think it just needs that. It's not really the way to do it, because I just hate the way that the characters look and play in that game already. It really needs to.
It's something I want. I now that the doors have been, so to speak, kicked open by the Sonic Unleashed, and not just the doors for Sonic, the doors for 360 decomps in general. Because there's going to be so much information that they can take from this that will speed that up. I am really hoping that 06 gets done, because a version of that which has had its roughest edges completely filed off by sheer performance grunt, if nothing else, is going to be, if nothing else, interesting. It remains one of, I mean, I'm a big old Sonic fan for my sins, and I really have never played through that game, and I would like to play through it. I want to know. I have to know. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've played through Shadow the Hedgehog. I've played through some right old toss, and but that one has eroded, evaded me. Not eroded me. It probably would erode me if I played it, but it has only evaded me so far. So I'm looking forward to that.
But that's why stuff like.
Same way with Unleashed, you know? Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
That's why stuff like Project Reignition and Project 06 are so important, because, it's now offering you an alternative way to play it with some enhancements and better loading and, like, Project Reignition, even in its first demo release, is an incredibly impressive little project. Being able to play it with a much more comfortable traditional controller setup is really lovely. And it just allows you to appreciate, like, the art design in a way that, like, the Wii version kind of masks it a lot. Like, no offense to the Wii, but, like, what with it being standard def, and there's an awful lot of, like, smeary, I suppose they're trying to use that hazy, like, hot heat, like, effect on a lot of the graphics of Secret Rings. Yeah. And it really kind of masks an awful lot of the artwork in a way that kind of makes it a bit ugly. Whereas Project Reignition is very sharp, very clean looking, and you can really appreciate just how good the artwork is.
When you try to play Sonic and the Secret Rings, like, on an actual console, it just looks too wide. Like, he just looks weirdly just fat in a way, and I'm not really sure what's going on there, if it's like a weird resolution thing or something's going on, but like it just looks correct.
It might be that it's 4:3 and it's just being stretched for widescreen.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, the main for me, like, and I'm whinging, I know, I know I am, but Sonic and the Secret Rings, like, if I was going to do anything with that game myself, it would be the fact that at the beginning of the game, for like the first hour, every minute you're going to be hearing "Make Believe Reborn." Like, stop it! Like, don't play that song every time you go to the menu, which is constantly.
Not a fan of the soundtrack of these two.
No, it's not that I hate the soundtrack. It's just that when you hear it every 5 seconds, you want to kill like people. Yeah. The same bit of the same song over and over again. I don't know what they were thinking.
But yeah, that brings us to the end of sort of our discussion of what's currently happening with modern Sonic fan games. There's some really good stuff to try there.
And this is just a slice of everything that's out there. Like, there are so many fan games out there across, you know, not just Sonic Fan Game HQ. They're on, like, Game Jolt has a whole bunch of them too. Like, there's people making all sorts of fun, interesting things. And it's just like, you know, if it's a programmer that doesn't know how to make art, then they can make a Sonic game and they can just put that on out there and try something out. So it's a really cool thing.
It's something I wanted to say, just sort of to wrap it up really, is basically this is not going to end. Like, it's never going to be an exhaustive overview because the Sonic community is never going to stop. Almost sounds like a threat, but I mean it in a positive way. So we could all, I mean, honestly, I guarantee you we could come back in even 2 years and there would be enough for another 2 hours. Like, it would be
easily.
And if and I'll say, you know, keep up with the scene, and, you know, I'd say let me know as well, to anyone listening, if you come across something you think I'll like, hit me up on the Blue Sky or whatever, because I do want to keep eyes on this, and this has been really educational for me, so thank you. I hope that it's been entertaining for the listeners, and I mean, I'm sure it has been, and informative, and I want to thank you both for doing it. I'm really grateful.
Not a problem.
So I guess the best thing to do would be, even though that they know already from the last episode, where let's start with again who the people who own a car. how can we find you on the internet, and why should we?
Yes, again, my name is Ryan Langley. I do own a car because I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and you really can't get out anywhere unless you have a car. It's very much not walkable here. But yes, you can find me at Ryan on Blue Sky as ryan.makesvideogames.com. You can go to makesvideogames.com and see my whole portfolio of all the different games I've worked on. I've worked on games like Fruit Ninja, Jetpack Joyride, Doomsday Clicker, Dungeon Inc., Cluster Duck. And currently, I am working with the guys at Spicy Gyro Games, who have made games like Panic Porcupine and Polyroll, who are part of the Sonic fan game community. Those games are very much Sonic-inspired as well. I'm working with those guys on a little thing at the moment. But keep in touch with me. I am also running Sonic the Hedgehog, PlayStation Park, Sega City, Nintendo Metro, all sorts of Twitter and Tumblr, Blue Sky accounts that post GIFs and videos every day. I'm glad to have been here for the Sonic Fan Game podcast, and I'd love to keep doing this. So, awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure if I should call you Sonic Yoda or if I should dox you. Have I already doxed you?
I'm pretty sure we've said that I'm called Lewis Clark on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure I have, yeah. See, I forget everything that happens within 5 seconds of it happening, sorry.
It's fine, it's my name, it's not being doxed, it's okay.
Okay, good.
But yeah, I'm Lewis Clark, otherwise known as Sonic Yoda. I run SegaDriven.com, and its accompanying YouTube channel, which you can find at youtube.com/@SegaDriven. I do weekly uploads about whatever Sega gaming nonsense I'm decided to be interested in that week, and then also a lot of homebrew and Sonic fan gaming and hack coverage of the Sonic Amateur Games Expo and the Sonic Hacking Contest every year. So yeah, well worth checking out. You can follow us on Blue Sky and Mastodon as @SegaDriven, and you can also follow me personally on Blue Sky and Mastodon as @SonicYoda.
And if you want to support Retronauts, which I'm very grateful if you do, if you go to patreon.com or Patreon, I don't know how you pronounce it, Patreon, it makes sense, patreon.com/Retronauts, you can, for a mere $5 a month, there are other tiers as well, but this is the good one, you can get 2 full bonus episodes every single month for absolutely, well, not free for $5, but, you know, they may as well be free, considering how good they are. And also, you'll get Diamond Fight's Tremendous this week in retro, I've undersold the output, This Week in Retro columns, which are also recorded as podcasts, so you can hear even more talking. And you'll also get the weekly episodes early. Every week, so you can be the coolest kids on the playground. I kind of stole that comment from Richard Herring, and I want to stop using it, so hopefully he doesn't find out. But thanks very much for listening, and I have no plans to stop doing Sonic episodes. I probably should. I've done lots and lots of Sonic episodes, and I don't want to just be the Sonic guy, but I guess I've made my grave, and it's time to get in it and smooth the earth over my fallen body and just allow myself to decompose. So thank you very much for listening. Sorry for ending on a down note with my whole decomposing body there. But if you don't like me, it's more of an up note. Thanks very much again, and take care, and goodbye.
Bye-bye.